Hi, I just wanted to take the time to welcome everyone on the panel today and welcome to the second in All Africa series with African peacebuilders and researchers. My name is Mansadi Sapeka and I'm part of the All Africa webinar team. Our focus today is Nigeria, appropriately nicknamed the Giant of Africa. The West African country boasts a population of over 210 million people and is the largest economy on the continent. But unfortunately, a big population can lead to big problems. Nigeria's people have over the years had to contend with so many challenges: insecurity, conflict, kidnappings, the continuous attacks by extremist group Boko Haram, issues of governance, corruption, and unemployment. But there are those doing what they can to help bring about peace and stability to the country. Among the topics that we would like to touch on in this session include the beginning and background of Boko Haram, and why has conflict been sustained there for so long? Governance, where exactly are the country's leaders falling short, and what role citizens can play to contribute? The economic implications of insecurity, how Nigeria has been responding to security and conflict challenges during the COVID-19 pandemic, and is there involvement of women and youth, or are they excluded from formal and informal peace processes?
I can start with you, Dr. Emeka Njoku.
Hello, everyone. My name is Emeka Njoku. I'm a postdoctoral fellow, an Eton International Fellow of the British Academy and the Royal Society. I'm currently having my tenure at the International Development Department in University of Birmingham here in the UK. For my PhD, I examined the intersections between counterterrorism and civil society organizations. What I was basically looking at was how counterterrorism policies have impacted with and shaped the spaces and actors of civil society organizations in Nigeria. And yes, I've also done some work. I've looked at the various manifestations of counterterrorism policies. I've looked at how it impacts the issue of gender, or how women are impacted differently in the Northeast. And I've also looked at, particularly, I looked at the issue of trauma, what is called vicarious trauma, how women, NGO workers who interact with those victims of sexual violence are themselves affected by the experiences of the victims. So I also look at that issue. And currently, I'm looking at the risking policy. The risking policy is a counterterrorism financing policy that was introduced after 9/11 by the Financial Action Task Force and also domesticated in various parts of the world. I'm looking at how it impacts Muslim communities and how that is changing the relationship between the state and Muslim communities in the UK and Nigeria. I'm doing a comparative study presently. Thank you.
Let's start with Dr. Fatima Akilu now. Doctor, with the work that you do, discuss the challenges you face as a peace builder, specifically on women and marginalization.
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me. And Emeka, well done for your research, especially highlighting the issue of trauma. I work in conflict, mostly across practically most of the states, apart from two in northern Nigeria. We also work in the Sahel, and we do some work in Syria, and I've recently done some work in Lebanon. A lot of the work that I do is really in mediation, in providing trauma support for victims of violence, insurgency. We also provide rehabilitation, reintegration. A lot of the people who have been kidnapped by terrorists, mostly Boko Haram, who have come out of captivity, we do the reintegration, rehabilitation, reinsertion. We also run an education program where we look at not just access to education, but the content of the curriculum, what is being taught at school. We look at values, we look at character, and we've developed our own values-based curriculum. So we have a school for children of insurgents and children of civilian JTF. And finally, we have a broad-based research platform where we look at pathways into radicalization across the Lake Chad Basin. We also look at women, how they've been affected in and out of conflict and by the conflict. And we also look at issues of banditry and other kinds of conflict, not just insurgency. So once again, thank you for including me on this platform.
You're most welcome. I see Mustafa had joined us. I'm not sure if he can hear me. Mustafa?
Hello.
Hi, hi, Mustafa. Welcome to the panel. I'm Mansadi. We've been communicating by email. We have Juanita from All Africa. And we're just going around with all the panelists, introducing yourselves and the work, the amazing work that you do within Nigeria to help build peace or create peace. If you can just tell us more about yourself and the work you've done.
My name is Mustafa Said. I am a researcher, a sustainable public policy advocate, and youth development enthusiast. I've previously led the Promoting Inclusive Governance and Youth Participation Project in Gombe State under YAGA Africa, that's Youth Initiative for Advocacy, Growth and Advancement, YAGA Africa. At the Center for the Study of the Economies of Africa, my research interest focuses on poverty alleviation, inclusive growth, and governance thematic areas. I am also a member of the World Economic Forum's Global Shapers Community, which is the youth and civil society wing of the forum. And what we do is to engage in social impact that cuts across the development areas, such as, of course, peace and conflict resolution, governance, and everything that has to do with social impact. I was recently appointed as member of the National Development Planning Committee in Nigeria. Essentially, that's what I do. I'm currently working on data governance in the African Continental Free Trade Agreement with CC.
Thank you so much, Mustafa. We want to touch on various topics because Nigeria is very big and there's a lot going on at the moment there and has been going on for some time. But also, just to touch on governance issues, you know, the economic implications of insecurity, the beginning and possible background of Boko Haram, where do they originate from? How Nigeria has been responding to security and conflict challenges, especially during this COVID-19 pandemic that's going to stay with us for some time. And also the question of whether there's involvement of women and youth, or are they excluded from peace processes and informal and formal peace processes? So I'd like to start with Dr. Fatima, just to find out your challenges, Doctor, that you face as a peace builder, specifically dealing with the issue of women and marginalization.
Thank you so much. And just to get us going, I'll give a brief intro into the origins and history of Boko Haram, and then my role as a woman peace builder, if that's all right. Most of us know here, since most of us are researchers, so one kind or the other, Boko Haram started formally around 2002. And at the time, it was a very small group led by Muhammad Yusuf, who was a local preacher in the northeast of Nigeria in Borno State. The group started to grow. He was a very charismatic kind of preacher. And there were a lot of young men, predominantly, who were disillusioned with governance. So it comes to your question about governance, where they were graduating from universities and there were no jobs available to them, no socioeconomic prospects. And they found his teaching very compelling and joined in droves. Muhammad Yusuf then had, his group had a confrontation with the police, and it set them on a collision course with authority. And it eventually led to his capture. He was jailed and extrajudicially killed. They went into hiding, but they really were not hiding. What they were doing was they were regrouping, they were training, they were getting contact with international terror groups, in particular Al-Qaeda at that time, and really planning for a full-scale attack under their new leader, Abubakar Shekau, which they returned to Nigeria around 2010 and launched a full-scale attack. Since then, Boko Haram has morphed into an international group due to affiliation with Islamic State. They broke up into two groups. One led by Abubakar Sheikhou, another led by the son of Muhammad Yusuf, who they became ISWAP. They became part of ISIS's territorial expansion within Africa. So they were the West African affiliate of Islamic State, quickly moved into operating in Chad, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Nigeria. And more recently, we've seen Boko Haram activity as far away as Mozambique in alignment with Islamic State. We've seen them cooperate with different branches of Al-Qaeda, including AQIM. So it's become much more international. And within Nigeria, it has expanded into the Northwest. This was not a region that they had operated in, to our knowledge, at least not in the past 10 years, but they now seem to have a foothold in the Northwest and also Middle Belt. As we know, only in the past couple of weeks, they went into Niger State, which is in the Middle Belt of Nigeria, and they took over three local governments and hoisted their flags. And these are places, obviously, where there has been a lack of government presence. They have now commenced the art of governing, providing resources, organizing people, and really putting down their own laws. That is the origin of the Boko Haram conflict. But Nigeria, as you know, we're battling far more than the Boko Haram conflict. It has expanded beyond terrorism, because what we're seeing is banditry a lot in the Northwest, farmer herder conflicts. But what is more worrying is that all these groups are talking to each other. There have been reports where Boko Haram has outsourced some of its schools kidnapping to bandits, where they paid them to go into schools and kidnap. So this alignment with criminal elements is creating immense instability nationally. I don't know if we're just focusing on Northern Nigeria, but if you see what's going on in the southeast of Nigeria, it's not pleasant at the moment. There has been a lot of criminality, different groups forming, asking for the right to self-determination. The INEC, which is our electoral commission, they've had almost 21 offices that have been burnt only in the past few months in the southeast. 2 days ago, we had one of the foremost politicians, a leading member of the ruling All Progressive Congress, the sitting government, was assassinated in the southeast as he was making his way to the airport. So there is this expansion of conflict across the country. Terrorists do not have the monopoly, but the most worrying for me is that they are cooperating, collaborating, exchanging weapons, resources with all sorts of groups. What that portends, I will leave to the other speakers to speak on. So just very briefly, my role as a woman peace builder, as you know, it's not that easy to stand up and in a country where it's still very patriarchal. There are not many platforms or spaces for women. Often our voices are not heard, we're marginalized, we're ignored, and we're not accorded the respect that we deserve, considering the input that we make. So a lot of peace-building spaces are totally dominated by men. In national peace-building processes that are convened usually by the government have very little input and space for women to be heard. So conflict disproportionately affects women and children. Yet the people who are making decisions are all men, and men from a very patriarchal male prism. How do I navigate that space with a lot of tact? I think as women in this space, we have to work twice as hard as men just to be heard. The area that I focus mostly is on rehabilitation, reintegration, trauma building, trauma support. Now in Nigeria, there are not many people, men or women, full stop, doing a lot of the work that I am doing and have chosen to do. I don't work in spaces where there's a lot of responses already. I work in hard to reach spaces where often we're the only people providing services. And I think because of that, sometimes people do call us to intervene in some of those spaces. But I think as long as we have something like 9 or 6% of women in parliament, we have very few women in the top levels of decision making. Women are not on the big boards in industry, in banking, anywhere where decisions that affect millions of people are made, there is an underrepresentation of women. And as long as that continues, I think even women peace builders like me will continue to suffer marginalization. So in some ways, I think sometimes we work in the shadows. And I'm hoping that as young people grow up, we see women that are in their 20s and coming out of school are really pushing and demanding to be heard, demanding spaces. So I think in a generation, a lot of this will change, because I see there's some softening and weakening of some of the patriarchal structures, even at the same time as we see, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, more women, more girls being removed from school, a lot of parents marrying off their daughters. So there is this kind of seesaw going on where you see a lot of women that are very highly educated, demanding space, very confident, and breaking these patriarchal structures. At the same time, their counterparts in poorer socioeconomic settings are being denied an education. So I think I'll stop there and let other people comment. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doctor. You've given us a lot to chew on with regards to your work. I was hoping to bring in Dr. Drenyaran next, if he is still connected or online with us.
Okay. Hello. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. You didn't get a chance earlier to introduce yourself as we were having connection issues. I'd just like you to give us more insight on the research work you've done. If you could speak to, you know, issues of governance and what more the country's leaders can do to help bring about peace within Nigeria.
Okay, thanks everyone, and quite happy to join this discussion. My name is Adedeji Adeniran. I am the director of research focusing on governance and education at the Center for the Study of Economies of Africa. We are based in Abuja. And my core research around governance, just to talk about that, it's on related to tracking progress on SDG 16 in Nigeria and in Africa as a whole. Currently, I think I'm leading the UN regional study on SDG 16. Trying to track, looking at what has been the effect of COVID-19 on peaceful and inclusive institutions in Africa, especially in the Sahel region, and which Nigeria, I mean, what are the kind of triggers for conflict, and what are the kind of process that COVID-19 could generate in the future. So we are leading this global discussion at present, and I urge everybody on this call to also participate in that deliberation, which is trying to harness the expert view on the current challenges facing the African continent. But just to look at Nigeria, so one of my research in education focused on issue around inclusiveness and provision of quality education. And one of the issues we've seen that is affecting these objectives in recent time has been the insecurity situation in the northeastern Nigeria that has actually now snowballed into what we see also in northwest and also in